And somebody said to me, "Oh, Lynn, that's some squint you've got going on there." And it was just a, you know, a normal comment. But that was something that made me take a little bit of a check with myself of how much this was now affecting me. So a lot of the times I find I'll email a club when I'm going to the away game, like Geoff or Joe's script commentary. They'll either come back and say, "No, sorry, we don't." So I just say, "Thank you for being honest. Is it something you're looking into?" It would really help, and send them a little bit of jargon of how it would help and stuff. Other times they might come back and be like, "No, we only offer local radio." And I'm like, "Okay, thank you. That's no good for me." The one thing that kept me going through that time, through everything, was the football. Coming here, being with friends, seeing yourself. I'll be like, "I know that voice."
Yeah.
Down Tilton Road.
Yeah.
I've had a guy comment on my social media. There's been a few points that I'll discuss, but I was wearing sunglasses in a photo. Obviously, I'm disgusted about being visually impaired. And he commented and said, "You're not blind. I can see your eyes open." And I was like, okay.
Wow.
<It's> educate.
Wow.
Yeah.
2026.
Yeah.
Why is this?
I've had people as I'm walking through the fan park, see the cane. "You're not blind. You don't look blind." I haven't quite got to the point yet, but in the visual impairment community, they're like, "You need to reply back. Well, you don't look ignorant, but here we are."
Before we get into this, we're doing over 1 million engagements a month, but most of you aren't subscribed. If you enjoy the content, hit subscribe and follow us on socials. It'll make such a massive difference. Cheers.
Welcome along. We'll do it properly. Welcome along. How are you?
Thank you.
Lindsay?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. We're down your beloved Blues, my beloved Blues.
Yeah, down the church.
Down the church. Tell me about your experience about getting into Blues. What got you into football?
I was born and bred Blues. My nan, bless her, she's no longer with us. She was the heart of the family, my dad's mom. I believe her parents were Blues as well, but I didn't really know them. But she was, when we were younger, she'd always come down like with my uncles and my cousins. They were all season ticket holders. A lot of my cousins still are now. We didn't really have the money for us to have that. But if a ticket come available, my nan would be like, "You come in." So I'd come down.
What area did you grow up in?
Chelmsleywood.
Yeah.
Still live there.
Chambo, man. Yeah. Love it. Yeah.
Love it.
Respect to
Chelmsleywood. It's got a bad rep, but I love Chelmsley. Chelmsley's like Blues. It's got a community.
Yeah.
And if somebody needs people, or somebody needs, you know, fundraising things, if there's somebody who's poorly, everybody comes together.
I think it gets a bit bad rap for people who aren't from the area, and even for Birmingham, really. Some people think Chelmsley Woods this and that, but
yeah,
if you know, you know, don't you?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. That, especially if you grow up there and stuff like that, and a big Blues following there, obviously, yeah. You've got filler mates and stuff like that, but yeah. Raw and honest, I think, isn't it?
It is.
A bit like the Blues.
It is. You know? It is. I love where I live, and it's helped as well. Staying in the area that I've grew up in with my sight loss.
Yeah.
Because I know the paths, I know the roads.
Yeah, yeah.
Ironically.
So familiarity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any standout moments for you, Daniel?
I think there's a few. So I'll always, my earliest memory is, it's not really that early on, but it was when I was about 12. I was walking along the Cop concourse here with my nan. We'd got in late because there was loads of queues at the turnstiles. And I was with my nan and my cousin Adam. And as we were walking along, Blues scored in the Tilton. So we're all shouting that. But then my cousin's grabbing me down. He's like, "No, no, no, it was offside." Maybe I was a bit blown back then. But yeah, that was always one. There's a few. I walked the team out about 10 years ago. That was a good day. I was in a hospitality in the Jasper at the time, and I wanted to walk the team out. That was a really good day. I had my heels on. I was a little bit drunk.
Yes. The best way.
Gonna happen.
Cranston's fuming as you're taking up the turf, as you're walking through.
Yeah. I met a few of the players that day as well in the tunnel. That was good. Met Duke. It wasn't about 8-10 years, actually. Memory's really bad. It's when Duke was playing campus here. So
yeah.
Them in the tunnel.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure you'll hear lots about them.
Well, I didn't even put it on air, but any favourite players?
Yeah. I don't think it's any secret. So Lucas Djukovic, Lee Camp, Carts as well, Darren Carter. Obviously, the players, he's a good bloke. They're all good bloke. And I think this is why I like them as well. Not only as players, they're really generally lovely guys off the pitch. And I think that's what was like, what's your favourite player? That's something I always think of as well. As like, yeah. But I'm glad Lucas is still here.
And we've just, Matt, you'll be happy to hear that we've just made a connection with Lee Camp. And we're going to organise some finer details. You might need a second camera off or something just to...
I actually messaged him about a week ago about an event for Love Brum, which I'm hoping he says yes to.
Yeah.
Because that'd be really good to have him on board as well.
Yeah.
So.
A genuinely nice guy. He is. Across. Yeah.
I mean, that's one of my other days is, you might have to remind me, Kev, was it a cup game where we went to penalties and it was down the tilt and end?
Yeah.
And he saved penalty after penalty. It was like that. That was always, was that where we was the away team?
Yeah.
It was that game, wasn't it?
Wasn't it this end? And it was against Cov when we were away at Cov.
I'm sure it was, but I'm sure the penalties were down there.
Okay.
That's what mine.
I'm getting my...
Am I the one going around? That's Skill Merrick, that's Tilton, isn't it?
Yeah. Am I like that then? Yeah. You have to tell me. Yeah. But that was, great. And he's like a bit of a cult hero, isn't he? Because... there's that worldy save. Remember that one? The whole pancake. That was brilliant. But he takes it in good spirit. But that I'm excited to do that. Going into accessibility.
Yeah.
How inclusive do you feel at the football now for disabled fans?
It's getting better. I think there's always room for improvement. And I think if clubs want to be fully accessible and fully inclusive and, be that North Star that everybody looks to, there's a lot of work to be done. But I think clubs can get there and it can be quite easy to get there, in my opinion, and doesn't cost a lot. They just need to listen to people with the lived experience, people that are living it every single day, but not just one person's experience either. You need a few people with each disability. Listen to each of them, see what works, what doesn't work. Because ultimately, they're the ones that are living it every game, know what works, what doesn't. But it is getting there. There has been improvements. Obviously, down with Blues, they've put in Alan March Sport with the audio script commentary. So that's been really good. There's still a few issues around like the processes, communications with that. Hopefully, that's something that can still be worked on.
So for someone who doesn't know anything about
I
do know about it, but I'm trying to be
so
obviously I followed your journey. We've been friends for a while now, so I've followed your journey intently, but tell us a little bit about the audio descriptive.
So audio descriptive commentary, you'll get normal commentary that kind of like just gives the normal commentary, what you'll hear on the radio, on the TV, of where the ball is, who's passed it, that kind of thing. Audio descriptor commentary is more detail. So if you imagine you're sat out there at a football game, close your eyes, even just for a minute, you don't know what's going on. You don't know where the ball is, like if it's gone out for a throw-in. Obviously, you know if there's a goal. And this is something I come to learn down here as well. And even at away games, there were certain songs we'd sing. Like if we've got a corner, we'd sing Wa-Birmingham City. And I'm like, oh, we've got a corner, when there was no audio descript available.
Yeah.
But there's then things of like where the players are, who's a passing. You just don't know anything about your team because you can't see it. So then having that audio descriptive commentary, which is more detail and tells you who's passed it to where, it's all about ball focus rather than player focus, but it's nice when players put into it as well so that you can connect that with your team. But it just gives you what's actually going on the pitch.
So it'll tell you 25 yards up on the byline, by the, don't know, this stand, that stand, and it'll really, that seems like it needs to be a good skill from the commentators. How are they different to the normal commentators then?
So when Alan March was brought in here, I got invited to the selection and training day. So I think we had about, again, memory's not very good. I want to say about 20 people come that had been selected from like CVs and things to come along. They were all just, if they got any experience, it was just commentary experience. Nobody had got any audio descriptive commentary, to my knowledge anyway. But that's how Alan March like to do it as well. And then they bring it in with the descriptive side of it, because it's such a niche skill to have, but they've picked it, like the volunteers here. We've got five that were then selected to be the audio descriptive team here. Absolutely brilliant guys. And they've all picked it up so well. And I think going from, going from just commentary to audio descriptive commentary, even they said, like, on that day, a lot of them will say, like, we never realised how different it was, but it's quite easy in a sense to pick up, but then it's keeping it going as well.
Do you always give them feedback as well?
So I've recently touched base with Alan from Alan March Sport. So I've given him feedback, any grounds that I go to as well. So like Derby the weekend, there was a slight issue with the mics, which I need to message him about, just things like that. But they do have an email address. I think it's like info@AlanMarchSport, something like that, where you can send feedback. But he did say mostly it's just like the clubs that they touch base with. So I think it'd be really good for people who do experience the audio description to give feedback to.
And how easy is it to kind of get those from people who are new to football and stuff like that? And are they rolling it across all the grounds, or are they trying it out at different grounds? Is it an accessible thing throughout the AFL and the Premier League, man?
That would be the hope, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you would have thought so.
Yeah. So this is something I'm probably going off a little bit here. When we went to League One, I wasn't expecting many grounds to have descriptive commentary. So a lot of the times I find I'll email a club when I'm going to the away game, I'm like, do you offer audio descriptive commentary? They'll either come back and say, no, sorry, we don't. So I just say, thank you for being honest. Is it something you're looking into? It would really help, and send them a little bit of jargon of how it would help and stuff. Other times they might come back and be like, no, we only offer local radio. And I'm like, okay, thank you. That's no good for me. Or they'll be like, yes, we do. Sometimes I'll get to the grounds and I'll be listening to it and I'll be like, this is not descriptive commentary. This is just like local radio commentary, which to me, I don't find helpful. Like, as much as I'm getting from the local radio commentary, I'm getting from our own fans in regards to the atmosphere and things. So I won't use that. But yeah, I was really surprised with League One how many grounds did offer descriptive commentary.
Right.
I think just generally overall with accessibility, like Yellowsternos in as well. There were so many grounds in League One that had Yellowsternos, and yet there's a lot of grounds in the Championship that don't have that.
What's
and
that?
So the Sternos in is you might see out here somewhere on the steps, ours is white.
Right.
So it's literally like a strip at the edge of every step.
Yeah.
So it's like you can, because the steps are quite dark, we can differentiate then if we've got a bit of vision where the edge of the step is.
Right.
It kind of helps us get down. Yellow's a lot better. White's great. Yellow's a lot better because it's more of a brighter, clearer colour.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was really surprised just with League One how accessible there was compared to a lot of grounds in the Championship. But I think Alan March currently provides descriptive commentary for about 20 football clubs. They do other things as well. I think they've just done like the Paralympics. But yeah, it's like, I think the thing with the descriptive commentary is like a lot of grounds think it's going to be expensive to put in, and actually it's not that expensive. And it's all volunteers that do the commentary side of it as well.
Right.
So yeah, it's like I'd say to any football ground, like if you want to be more inclusive for your blind and partially sighted supporters. And there's a lot of other people that can use it as well with different disabilities that would help. Like have a look at Alan March because it's really good. I was always, if I was going to an away game and it said they offered Alan March, I'd be like, yes, it's going to be good today.
Is there a market for people just being self-employed and or even through Alan March there to just be by your side? But is there a market for that? Obviously.
I think so.
It's an earphone thing. So is it an earphone thing?
Yeah,
it's all wireless.
Literally you take your own earphones, frequent 5mm jack port. You just take your own. I do find noise cancelling headphones are the best ones.
Gotcha.
For it. But yeah, you just take your own headphones along.
And I give you
they just give you the device.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode is proudly sponsored by Vanology at Birmingham Van Centre. If you're self-employed, running a business, or scaling up your fleet, these are your guys. With over 20 years' experience, they specialise in new and used vans with flexible options to buy, lease, or finance, all tailored around what actually works for you. No pushy sales, no hassle, just proper advice and real vans at real prices.
Whether it's one van or a full fleet, Steve and the team have got you covered.
But yeah, I think with the... So I used to have... I had a friend when I'd go to the away games that if the audio wasn't there or it wasn't what I was expecting, she'd then help with commentary. I think in regards to like obviously employing someone, you then technically having to take them as your carer.
Yeah, right.
And maybe taking you away from like friends and family as such as well.
Yeah.
Whereas it's
so ideally it's the club's doing it.
Yeah.
It's there readily available for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with the audio description as well, it's a whole ground thing. So away fans can access it, home fans can access it.
Yeah.
And get this as well. But technology in like with everything for blind and partially sighted supports is just really improving. And obviously you've got like the descriptive side of it and then going into like the Give Vision headset that I've recently started trialing.
Right.
So this is for partially sighted people. You have to have some remaining vision, but that's just a game changer. Like that's amazing.
Because obviously I've followed you and we've been friends for a while and I've seen the strides that you've put into doing that. Tell us a little bit about your sight and your journey with that, because I know that it's just gone, isn't it? Like even in the space of what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah. Yeah, so the journey started out when I was 20, a long time ago. started
a year ago, Bob.
Absolutely. I started having a few vision changes, thought nothing of it, just went to Specsavers over Chelmsford.
Other opticians are available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember much of it, but what I do remember is they were like, we need to refer you to the hospital. Didn't really think much of it. I believe I was at the hospital within like days. And I remember waiting in a waiting room, being called in. And they was like, oh, we need to put some drops in your eyes to have a look at the back of your eyes. Could you be pregnant? And I was like, I could be. I knew there was a chance, but I was like, but I'm not. And they was like, okay, we'll just put one drop in just in case. Lo and behold, it turned out I was actually present with my firstborn.
Yeah.
We turned 22 yesterday.
Oh, I have birthday.
Yep. so yeah, a few weeks later, I found out I was actually pregnant with him. And it kind of started from there. But for many years, I just had glasses, just got on with it. Obviously, motherhood come. My son was born with a lot of health issues. So it's kind of that just kind of took over. It's like it was what it was sort of thing. It did become apparent later on in life, after having my daughter and 2 miscarriages, that my sight would get worse every time I was pregnant. So it was a hormone thing that was causing it. Never, don't know why I didn't ever think this, but obviously coming into my 40s, you've got perimenopause, going into menopause. I didn't even think about this with the hormone changes. And then lo and behold, about two years or so ago, things started to drastically decline. I was already wearing a specialist lens then. Left eye has been no good for many, many years. It's fine, I just get on with it. Glasses were no longer working. There was just nothing was working anymore. And then I suddenly connected the dots and I was like, I'm in perimenopause from other things and obviously speak with the doctors. And I was like, of course it was going to get worse.
Voilà.
But again,
you wouldn't even think that, would you? You wouldn't put 2 and 2 together there and then think that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I forgot to say, so the condition I was diagnosed with is called keratoconus. And there was not a lot of research into it initially. And they used to say, I think they still do say it's a fairly rare disease or condition.
Try to say that while you're drunk. Yeah.
But yet,
like, so what we're talking rare wise, one in
I can't remember what they
said. One in millions.
I think it used to be more rare than what they're saying now.
Right.
But I remember, like, as I got older, I learned that a girl I used to work with when I was like 16, 17, she'd also got the condition. Then one of my other friends that I met, her husband had got the condition.
Right.
And then one of my old bosses, her brother-in-law had also got the condition. I was like, well, it's not that rare. Like, I know 3 people.
That's eating the whole of the, just you guys and the, yeah.
And it was like, this was before I went into any kind of like visually impaired blind support groups or anything like this. It's just people that I knew.
Yeah.
So I was like, it really can't be that rare. I've gone off on a tangent again, have not.
That's all right. That's okay. So, so over the 2 years now, it's got to this. So obviously you've got your stick and stuff now.
Yeah.
Not driving?
No, sadly I had to give up my license. So once my vision declined to a point that even, I wear a specialist lens in my good eye. Once it got to a point of that wasn't even legal driver limit, that's when they were like, you need to send back your license, but we're going to certify you visually impaired. That was just over a year ago.
Is that a kick in the nuts?
Yeah. That took a lot of my independence away. I pushed through it. I had a lot going on. So around the time it started to decline was 2024. Personally, me and my family had a lot going on. And ultimately, my sight loss just took a bit of a back burner. Just had to adapt.
You just like, have to get on with it.
Yeah. So it's just like, it is what it is. Like my daughter, we lost my daughter's dad to suicide, which was really tough. And trying to be there for her and make sure she was okay. She was already home educated due to mental health issues, which we now know is linked with a few neurodivergent disabilities as well. She's got a lot going on. She was diagnosed ADHD, told she's got autism, she's got hypermobility, potential POTS, colour blindness, severe anxiety, she doesn't leave the home. So it's like I had all that going on. Plus I had to apply for an EHCP for her, which any parent that's been through that.
What's an EHCP? What's that? EHCP?
Educational healthcare plan.
Right.
So she couldn't cope in mainstream school, which is why I'd already took her out. It was like 2022 or 2021. I took her out.
Before lockdown.
Yeah. Just after lockdown started. Was it? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. For fear that I was going to lose her. And eventually the same way that we lost her dad. We weren't together. He'd, you know, got his own family and that, but he was still a good friend of mine, good support network. Forgot what I was saying. Sorry, Kev.
No, you just thought, sod it, I've got to do this. I'll worry about my eye. I'll just get her through and put glasses and lenses and get through it. How does that work with your family dynamic then, with your sight and having your little un who's at that stage of her life? Is it a hint, like a hindrance to your relationship? Does it affect you at all? Do you know what I'm trying to say? Is it harder? Is it easier? Is it just as hard?
I think initially I wasn't even accepting myself how much my sight loss was affecting me.
Right, yeah.
And I always remember, and it was nothing against the person that said it, but towards the end of 2024, I went to an event and somebody said to me, oh, Lynn's, that's some squint you've got going on there. And it was just a normal comment. But that's was something that made me take a little bit of a check with myself of how much this was now affecting me.
And your self-consciousness and your, just the flippant comment that someone could have just said,
people were starting to notice. And I think that's why when I was certified? I think even before then, actually, I remember it was really bad. I think it was before I was certified. I was offered the mobility training with the cane and I was really apprehensive about it, especially because back then I was still driving when I had my lens in. But then the lens, my eye doesn't tolerate it that much. Ultimately now, I get 10 hours out of it a week, which is how I still do my job.
A week?
A week.
Wow.
4 months a week, 2.5 hours, I wear it to look at my computer to do my job, and that's it. Because otherwise I get infections, I get a sore eye, I just can't wear it for any longer. And every 3 to 4 months I have to take a week off or 2 weeks to leave it out for a week to give it a break and then build the lens wear time back up.
Why?
So this way I had to adapt. And initially it was just adapt, just do it. Like the amount of technology I use now is actually ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm like a walking piece of technology, considering how anti-technology I used to be.
Yeah, you've had to get up to speed.
Yeah.
But I've always, as I've known you, you've always been like a resilient, quite a strong woman.
Yeah. I think on the surface, and that's what I show people, people haven't seen the tears behind closed doors. There's been a lot, but again, with everything my daughter's had to go through, like, it is what it is.
She's a whinge so about strong. Kind of angle.
Yeah. And there's plenty more people with other disabilities that have it so hard in life. And I'm like, ultimately, I can still get around. Yes, I need a lot more help than I used to. And that's been one of my biggest things, is asking for help. I've always been very strongly independent, done everything myself. That's been a hard adjustment. But there is people who are a lot worse off, who can't communicate their needs, who, you know, might start to come to the football because it hasn't been accessible for them to be able to come. And actually that's, you know, it might have spoiled them into depression as well, because this is something they love and this is the only thing they got to do. I think this is a part of my fights for what I do as well, the work that I do around advocating and educating. It can be really frustrating, but I'm like, there is so many people that will benefit. And it was like all through that time of everything. So it was like, there was a lot of things that happened. Like, I was diagnosed with, I'm probably going to get it wrong now, familial hypercholesterolemia, which is inherited high cholesterol. At some point previous to 2024, I went for gene testing because this is what my dad has, got diagnosed with that. Again, that's quite a big thing to do with my heart and stuff. It is what it is. Like, it's very much gone on the low. I was diagnosed with costochondritis, and this is why I was in so much pain with my rib cage every day. Again, it's just gone on a back burner. It's like, this is why I advocate for accessibility, especially in football stadiums, because the one thing that kept me going through that time, through everything, was the football. Coming here, being with friends, seeing yourself. I'm like, I know that voice.
Yeah.
Down Tilton Road.
Yeah.
I'm like, just being here with friends and family.
It's just that escape, isn't it?
Yeah. And ultimately, we were rubbish back then as well. Like, yeah. We were going down,
I was going to say, one. Pinning your, and then that's saying something. If you're pinning your hopes on Blues at that point, then I think there's something wrong with all of us when we follow the Blues. But yeah, but it is still that. It's not all about the football.
No.
It's not all about football. The results are byproducts, really.
Yeah.
Some of the time, we'd like to get some results in, but it's coming down.
Highs and lows.
Having a few drinks with your mates, having some food, having a bit of banter and joys and sorrows.
Yeah. Keeping that bit of normality as well. When I always say to people, you don't know what's going on in someone's life. So if they can have that bit of normality and come to the football, and that's why I'm like, accessibility shouldn't be an afterthought. It should just be included, because anyone can become disabled. You can have an accident, a heart condition. Anyone at any point in their life can become disabled. You could have a stroke and never know what might happen after that, that you need accessibility. And why should you have to stop doing something that you absolutely love, that even in the worst times, the protests and things like that is what brings you down here. And I always say to people, the 90 minutes on the pitch is just a very small part of the day.
Yeah.
It's about those that you're around and
So we just touched upon your work in life and using your contact lenses. And so you work for the great charity that is Love Brum. Tell us a little bit about Love Brum.
I love Love Brum.
Love the Love Brum.
Yeah. So prior to working at Love Brum, I worked in primary schools, mainly in medical. And I was looking for something else at the time. I can't quite remember how the conversation went. I think it was like over LinkedIn or something with PJ.
Yeah.
I didn't know him personally at the time.
Friend of the show.
He's a good man. I think I can't remember why I connected, and I messaged about something. And then he just happened to mention that there was a position available at Love Brum, admin assistant. I applied, went through first interview. Got called back for second interview. I tore my calf muscle and I was on crutches. I was like, oh. I did that.
The wars. Just stop being in the wars.
Yeah. That was, I'd started a fitness class. It was the very first one. And yeah, I just went to run. I shouldn't run.
No. No, I'm feeling the effects of running last night. Yeah. Yeah, it's not good. You. Not good for running. So for those that don't know, describe Love Brum for us and what it kind of means to the city.
So Love Brum is a Birmingham-based charity. We help to find like smaller charities, volunteer-led causes, community groups, all within Birmingham that are doing amazing things within the community, but people might not necessarily know about. So we help to find them. We give them a little bit of a platform to showcase them, offer them funding if we can, for anything that they may need that for with what they're doing. They're just amazing. The causes that we meet, they are like the heart of Love Brum. They're why we do what we do. There's so much good work being done in our city that you just wouldn't know about unless you were in that or like within those circles. And it's just amazing. Like I just love it. Whenever I know I've got like a meetup with a cause coming, I'm like, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Cause there is so many people helping so many people in many different areas. And that's what I said. I think it brings it back to like the whole charms thing, the whole community thing. That's when you get to see exactly what's going on in our city. And the world's full of a lot of hate and, you know, negativity. And there's just so many incredible people out there that, as I say, usually volunteers that are doing all this work to help people to live better lives. Obviously, especially since not just become disabled, because I was a carer for an accessible group as well, Accessible Blues, who used to be the DSA. I used to be a carer for them. That they were one of the volunteer groups that I'm talking about. Just people doing everything they can to like make other people's lives better, to enrich their lives, and to help the city become a better place to be. And it's
a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. And we worked closely. Obviously, I worked with yourselves and Love Brum and stuff, and that's how we really got to know each other. But we've had the likes of Malachi on. We've obviously done that Hidden Heroes campaign. Malachi's been on. He's helping the youth and stuff like that. And we've had Dion, who obviously she doesn't need an introduction. She's just brilliant for the city. The lads from Foundation to Change and stuff like that. It's all people who are so relevant and they're so great, but what Love Brum does is enables them to get a bit of a presence. So I think we spoke off camera that Love Brum's great at getting these guys exposure, but it's not like Love Brum have made these guys. It just gives them the platform to then go on and do bigger and better things. I'm doing some work with Foundations to Change at the moment, and they've gone from strength to strength, and know that D's doing really well, Malakasi is doing really well. So it's just, so what Love Brum has provided though those guys with is the exposure from the likes of PJ and Tim, who are big characters in the city.
Yeah.
And it's not even about the money, I don't think. It's about just saying these guys, this is what they do.
Yeah.
And so people who have got these lived experience of being homeless or I don't know, being on the streets or addictions and stuff like that, they've got a place to think, okay, well, this is somewhere to go, where you wouldn't necessarily know that, and Google's great, but it's crap and so forth. So but I think what you guys do is just, it's invaluable really, isn't it?
It is. Mm. It is. It's really good what we do. And I say, but the causes are always at the heart of it.
Yeah.
They're what make me get out of bed every day, put my lens in, I sit at my computer, and I do it all for them.
Yeah.
Because they're just incredible what they're doing.
You got any standout stories or moments that make you think, yeah?
I think they all are. Just any cause that I connect with, like I just come away, if I have a Teams meeting or face-to-face, I come away and I just feel so uplifted and empowered and so generally grateful and reminded that there is generally nice people in the world. Despite what we hear on the news, there is actually really good people in the world. And any cause that I connect with, they're just amazing. And each cause is individual as well. They're all doing something different.
Yeah.
And it makes you realise how many people need help as well.
I was going to say that to you. So you're at the front line as well, aren't you? So what do you see that some of the challenges are for charities and stuff?
I think it's a lot of charities, what people don't realise is it's a very small team behind it that are trying to do everything. So it's like fundraising, operations, social media to keep the presence. Like, there's so much to it that people don't realise that, you know, that how much goes into it. And it's a little bit why we do the volunteer hub on the Love Run website. We ask any of our causes if they need any help with anything, if they've got any volunteering opportunities. We advertise them on there and anybody can access that. Corporates can access that. Just to go and help and free people if they want to give up the time to volunteer.
But it's not even about funding most of the time. It is time, isn't it? Time is the essential.
Time and skills as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To and actually funding
helps them to continue.
Of course, yeah.
With operations stuff as well. But yeah, ultimately, it's a platform and finding people to help them. And like, I think we had one contact before, and it was about like just somebody's like their account system.
Yep.
They'd got a volunteer foot, but they didn't know how to use the system. So like, we reached out to one of our accounts corporates and was like, would somebody be able to give like half a day's volunteering just to help them? And that's what they did. And it was really good. And that gave them the skills then that they need. And they were really appreciative of that.
Brilliant.
Yeah. There's so much that goes into charity work. Like, your mind doesn't switch off. It's not your normal 9 to 5.
Constantly, yeah. Trying to get inspiration and kind of find different avenues, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you, so we spoke a little bit off camera that you do work from home for them, and how do you balance your work life, your personal life, and your motivation to carry on with your advocacy? And
God knows.
I don't know. I'm genuinely asking you how you do that, because you seem like you're the busiest woman on the planet.
Yeah. I very much, it sounds silly, but putting in time to just rest and for myself has been a big part of that. When everything that happened in 2024 happened to me and my family, I very much had to simplify life. So it was my children, home and work. And then the only time I got out was football, which was hard at the time because it wasn't accessible when my sight started deteriorating more, which is when the advocacy work started. There was many tears. There was a complaint that went in. I don't think they'll mind me saying this. They've apologised as a club. I did have to put a complaint into the club secretary and to Jeremy Dale about the lack of the service that they were saying they provided down here.
You could probably say, hand on heart, you was a raw pain in the arse for them. But
I was.
But
probably still am.
It's for the greater cause, isn't it? And
it is.
I think they're starting to see now that it is so important.
Yeah.
And to be an advocate themselves to push it out there, because some clubs might not have people who are as loud as you who are pushing for it, and people are just coming along and not getting the full experience from it. So I think you're important to be that pain in the ass in the nicest possible way.
I do try to be a nice one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and there's always room for improvement. And, you know, it can be quite frustrating if people won't listen. But I think that's one of the biggest things in my advocacy work. I'm always about, first of all, independent accessibility. Yes, we have a carer who comes along with us, friend, family member, amazing. But ultimately, if I can still do something myself with just a few adjustments that would help so many other people in my position as well, what's the issue in doing that?
What would some preconceptions be about visual impairment that you'd want to change?
I was thinking about this one earlier. So I've had a guy comment on my social media. There's been a few points that I'll discuss, but I was wearing sunglasses in a photo. Obviously, I'm disgusted about being visually impaired. And he commented and said, "You're not blind. I can see your eyes open." And I was like, okay.
Wow.
Educate.
Wow.
Yeah.
2026.
Yeah.
Why is this?
I've had people, as I'm walking through the fan park, see the cane. You're not blind. You don't look blind. I haven't quite got to the point yet, but in the visual impairment community, they're like, you need to reply back. Well, you don't look ignorant, but here we are. Like, I've not quite got to that point yet.
Yeah.
And
that's polite.
Yeah. Maybe the next time somebody says it, it might come.
Yeah.
I've had a guy, it's all guys. There is some women that as well, but these are the ones that stick out.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
A guy commented on my social media post once telling me I was blind because God hated me. I was like,
what?
Okay.
What?
But yeah, I think along with it all, it's getting people to realise blindness is a spectrum. You know, there's, I think it's something like 7% of blind people actually see nothing, or it's 3%. It's a very low percentage of people that actually see nothing at all.
Yep.
So it's getting people to understand that blindness is a spectrum. And I'll happily, like any, I have a lot of people come up to me, literally Derby the weekend, I had three different guys come up to me at different points, and it always comes to the same line, which I'm happy to answer, is what can you see?
Yep.
And I'm always happy to answer that. And I always say to them, you know, blindness is a spectrum. So the next person you meet who's visually impaired or uses a cane will be very different to me as well.
Yeah. So what can you say?
Not a lot. Two big bright lights in my face.
Is it? And I was thinking about that when I was thinking, when you see, oh, I've got them lights up there. Probably not healthy, are they?
I know you're there.
Yeah.
And your white T-shirt against the blue background.
Yeah.
Is that so? So if you move, I can see you moving, but that's it. I can't see your face. To be fair, you could be stood here, and I wouldn't see your facial detail.
Right.
So it's. I know there's something up there. I'm going to assume blues players or something like that.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look like an advertisement sign, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you're probably going to tell me, yeah, it is.
I'm not going to be horrible. I'm not going to be horrible. Yeah, Tommy Doll. We use Tommy Doll's box. So there's a few pictures of Tommy Doll up there.
Right. Yeah.
You have to be cleverer than.
I'm always in my head.
Yeah.
Always in my head, thinking ahead, but then the anxious side of me is always thinking back as well.
Right.
At certain things that somebody said, like if I've walked past something, oh, you don't look blind. That will stay with me. Yeah, I'm getting better.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm all.
You're a bloody person, though, aren't you? So, like,
yeah.
And you're a woman. Like, so, but I don't know what, honestly, what goes through people's heads.
Yeah.
It's just mad, isn't it? It's just really mad. Yeah. But you can't educate ignorant people.
No.
What are the good things? like me when I seen you outside, I was like, come on. Yes. And I had a few drinks. I was like, yeah. And you were like, Kev, you're walking too fast.
Yeah,
but you're a face around here. You're like a bit of a blues celebrity, I think.
Do you think?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I think so. But it's okay. There's got to be nice things as well that comes with that.
There is not... so many nice people. Our fan base is amazing.
Oh, I think that.
Even as a woman coming to the football, I've never really, and I'm not saying that others haven't, but I've never really experienced like sexism and that either. When I first got my cane, that was one of my biggest fears, was getting over the self-consciousness of bringing it here.
Yeah.
Because I did know quite a lot of people already. And then it was like, when I tore my calf muscle, it was an away game, I can't remember where, as I was walking in the toilet, somebody who obviously didn't like me for whatever reason made a comment about that I was faking it. What would I possibly be
taking?
Yeah, because I was on crutches. So that stuck with me then, with having to start using a cane and coming to the football. It was the only thing I was doing then. I was literally just coming out to the football. It was my only time out from being mom, time out from being send mom, like just time to be me, have a few beers, be with my friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
But actually people have been amazing. They've really been so, like, just incredible. Like, I love our fan base. I think they are. You will get the odd one or two.
Yeah. Same as any fan base. Yeah.
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 But considering all the stories that I hear, I'm like, I love the Blues.
Mm.
I love them. Like, I like my friends around me, everybody from like the disabled community. They're just incredible. And it's like when my son can't come with me as my carer because he changed jobs and due to work commitments, he can't always come.
Yep.
My friend Stacey now comes. She will get the bus to my house to come and get me first, or her wife will drop her off, or her dad will drop her off come and get me first, because she knows I struggle with... I'm getting through it a little bit now that the days are getting lighter again.
Yeah.
But like it's called the Black Path. Do you know the Black Path?
No.
No, just across from Chelmsley to the airfield.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. That become, I've become a little bit fearsome of that throughout the winter. So she just come and get me.
Yeah.
I'm getting through that now.
Oh, because that's at the back of yours, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. By the river.
Yeah.
But now that I've got my Meta glasses, I'll phone her because she knows I'm still anxious and she'll just stay on the phone with me as I'm walking. And I just, she doesn't have to do
that.
Tell
us about your Meta glasses.
I love my Meta glasses.
I look class.
Been incredible.
Yeah. Did I say a goal the other week? The other day? Or a celebration or something using the crowd and you put a recording up? Did you record with some lad? I think you recorded some lad. I was just like, oh, I need some.
Yes.
I need some.
When I was in my season ticket seat in Block 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember who we played. But I
no, or, no. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it a winner?
I think so.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah.
The memory is really bad.
Class. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been really good. They've been such a good tool to have. So it's like, I was always losing stuff. I still lose stuff. I still forget stuff. With everything that's happened, it's been said that I've got CPTSD, which is why the memory and the brain fog is the way it is.
Right.
Again, just adapted. It is what it is. But I was always losing. So like, I'd go in my bag. If my phone was ringing, I'd go in my bag to get my phone out and then like wouldn't be able to find something else that was in my bag. And I've obviously dropped it. So with the Meta glasses, I answer my calls on them. It will tell me my text messages coming through. It will tell me my notifications. And also with the anxiety with my daughter being at home while I come to football.
Yeah.
That has really...
You're just checking your phone every 2, 3, 5 minutes.
And now I just get it through next to my head. Again, the side of me though with the technology and things, I'm a little bit cautious of constantly having a device right by my head.
Yeah.
But what it gives me outweighs that.
Yeah.
And it's just little things like if I was putting on now, I'd say like, hey Meta, look and tell me what's in front of me. And it would say something like, there's a guy in the background with a white t-shirt on. There seems to be what like is bright lights, possible camera equipment.
Yeah.
That kind of it would describe my surroundings. And then I could specifically, like, if I look towards there, I'd be like, tell me more about the picture on the wall. And assuming, if he's got, like, a number or something on his shirt, it would tell me things like that. But that's really helped with, like, I can't see signs. I can't read menus. So that's it really helps with that.
Absolute game changer.
Yeah. They're so good.
That is so good.
Love them.
I just want some just to be cool.
Then there is the content side of it as well, which has really helped with catching photos, videos. They've been really good.
And stuff you can catch up back on them when you're in the house and you can be like, and capture those scenes.
I've been that as well. So with my phone, if I put it here and squint, I can see mostly what's on my phone.
Yeah.
So if I'm in a moment where I obviously can't see it, I'll video it. And then I'll go back to it later on my phone.
Yeah.
And it's not the same as living it in the moment, but at least I can still see what it was.
Yeah.
There was I'm really pushing through the fear at the minute of walking the dog. So I took him for a walk the other day over the airfield. This was the first time we've been over the airfield in 18 months.
Yeah.
Because the fear really got the better of me. We're feeling vulnerable. I used to take my cane as well. He doesn't like it, but then I'd also feel vulnerable. People see my cane, they're going to know automatically I'm blind.
Yeah, that's playing on your mind as well.
Yeah. So now I've kind of adjusted.
Although you could
that.
Batter him with it.
Well, there is that, but I won't be able to see him too bad. I wonder where there was.
Yeah.
Do you know you can get a lightsaber, Kane?
Can you?
Talking about it, you're going completely off topic. I mean, I've got the blue line with bottom of mine from the dark, but. So I took the dog for a walk over the airfield, really pushed through that fear. I don't take my cane when I'm walking anymore because I've learned to feel the movement through his lead. So if he goes like up a step or down a step, I can feel that.
Yeah.
And I know that I do one step, two step, and on the third step is where I then need to step. That tells if as long as his lead stretched, then that's how we've worked it. It's really silly the things you get in your head. Like I know it's 23 steps up to my seat, up the tilter. It's little things like that where I say you're always in your head, but you do stuff to adapt.
Yeah.
So, you know, although I did start speaking to a guy the last game, thinking it was my friend Terry, and then I was like, I'm so sorry, I thought you were...
Well, just going along with it.
Steps is, 20, he's 21 steps, and I think he was like the row in front.
Bless him. Just Karen's speaking to him, like,
I'm always doing that.
I love that.
This is why I've always got a smile for everybody, though. Yeah. So I was going back, sorry.
Go on.
I was walking the dog I've now bought this. It's actually an armband that's got the visually impaired symbol on it. And it says I'm visually impaired. It's bright fluorescent yellow. I've attached that to his lead. Obviously, people won't necessarily notice that, like they would the cane.
Yeah.
But it's there. It's going to sound really stupid. I'm always fearful that somebody's going to film me outside their house not picking up my dog poo because I haven't seen him doing it. So at least if I've got that, somebody might point out, well, hold on a minute, what's that on his lead? Because that is always a fear.
Yeah,
especially because he moves around.
You wouldn't even think about that, Joe. Someone I'm just like, abusing you. Pick up that. And you're like,
spotted childhood.
Where is it? Yeah. You start putting lights, feeding him some lights so at least there's some lights coming in his poo so you can see where you put your hand. But that, like you say, that you take that for granted, don't you?
Yeah.
But you're like, oh,
if it's like their dog come towards me or something, because I'm always fearful of dogs off the lead. Yeah. This is one of the fears, but we're getting through it. But this is what happened the other day. So we were walking back from where the planes go over, and I'm like, trying to squint. I'm like, that looks like a really big white dog in front of us. And I was like, I'm sure there's somebody with it. And the closer I got, I was like, this looks like a really big dog. Is it a Great Dane? Is it the big ones? I was like, it must be one of those. So I started filming on my Meta glasses. And then as we got probably this close, I was like, oh, it's a horse. But it's little things like that. If I'd have asked Meta, look and tell me what's in front of me, it probably would have told me.
But you're like instantly thinking, oh, God, dude's got this dog. You've got that worry about dogs off the lead anyway. That is on big dog.
Yeah. Horse. But then she did have two dogs with her, which were off the lead and started following us. So I was a bit like, Cornblitz. But yeah, I think I'm always mindful of looking vulnerable in certain situations as well. That's, and obviously that's what the cane does. It helps me so much and I've never stopped using it. But in certain situations, I'm like, I don't want people to know. But then ultimately, they might need to know. I've probably gone off on a tangent on the question.
No, that's so frustrating though, isn't it? That there's people that would take advantage of that.
Yeah.
But you know that there are people about it. That's, you've got to be mindful.
You're
a woman of the world from Chelmsley Wood. You know what goes on. We all know what goes on. But you also need to, like, you're blind. Like, why would anyone even bother with it? But you've got to always be on the...
Yeah. There is people out there, and it's happened before when I've paid by cash.
Yeah.
That's the one that always comes to mind. But I know there's other situations where I'm like, they clearly took advantage of the fact that I can't see properly. But I always say there is far more kindness out there.
Yeah.
You know, and love will always win in the world, despite what's going on. And obviously, effort with the wars and effort at the minute, kindness and love will always win. Some say I live in my own little pink bubble, but I like it here.
I like that pink bubble. I like it.
Yeah.
Right, let's do some quick fire. Let's lighten it up. So quick fire questions. Match day, snack or drink, favourite?
So.
To go to.
I'm going to go back a little bit here first. Do you remember? So I'm talking, how old am I? So I'm talking about 30 years ago.
Okay.
Do you remember?
I'm waiting
the for that soggy number. Cheeseburgers with the tiny little pieces of onion in them in the foil bag. They were the best thing ever and they need to bring them back.
Bring them back.
They were amazing.
Yeah.
So that was back then. Now I've got two different things I go to. So the kiosks out of the stadium, but I think they're still part of Lou's Food.
Yep.
You've got the one on Cattell Road, chips and gravy with onions on top.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. And chips is a lot easier for me to, although I end up with gravy everywhere. Stace is always like, you've got gravy on the chip. that's incredible. Or you've got the kiosk out on Tilton Road, their chicken burger with onions is just so good. Now, I've lost a lot of smell and taste over the last few years as well, but they're both foods. I'm like, they're good.
Old school. Yeah. I like it. We've done favourite blues player. Lee Camp, we love Lee Camp.
And Duke.
And the Duke. One word to describe Birmingham.
It's family, isn't it? Family. Yeah. It's why I support the blues, because of my family. It's, you know, bringing my grandson here now. He's been the absolute shining light over the last few years. He's just amazing. And being able to bring him here, even though he was born when we was in League One.
So you would say he's been born
into... He's gone from the bottom up, hasn't
Yeah, exactly.
Highs and lows and all that.
Okay, so we're in Division 3, That's when we started supporting him, Division 3. Early kickoff or evening game?
So,
from a personal and a pride kind of and an atmosphere.
Yeah, this to me depends on the day. I love a Friday night kickoff under the lights. I need help, extra help, because I can't see in the dark. But I love a Friday night under the lights because then I also get all weekend to do my jobs at home.
Yes.
But
that Newcastle game, write it. That Newcastle game was just.
Yeah.
You forget about the result, don't you? Because the atmosphere in the game was just one of the best.
Atmosphere's everything when you've lost your sight as well. And this is what I always say to people, like, I did have a guy at an away game, I can't remember where it was, had heard him say, oh, was she bother coming if she can't see? And that, it was Blackburn away, I'm sure, Yeah, I think it was Blackburn away. I did a post about it to educate people as to why I still play the football. Because I was like, atmosphere. Atmosphere here is everything. Home and away, I was like, you can't beat it. So when it's a dull atmosphere, it's not the best.
Has it accentuated your hearing?
You'd think so, but I'm actually losing my hearing.
Get lost.
I'm losing almost. This is why I'm a hugger, because it's the only sense I've got left. I always say this. This is why I'm a
hugger. But I bet you feel it more.
You do.
Not,
and it's
not having the distraction of sight. In the nicest possible way, but you just all—it's all there, then, isn't it? Like,
It's you hear things that you probably wouldn't normally hear. As in, like I say, when we've got a corner, we sing a certain song every time we get a corner.
Yeah.
That's why I come to know, oh, we've got a corner. Wonder which side of the pitch it was. But I knew we got a corner.
Come on.
Or if Stano scores, I know we scored because everybody's chanting his name afterwards. That kind of thing. If the ref isn't very great, there's obviously certain...
There's a couple of certain songs for that.
So yeah, atmosphere is everything. I can't remember what the question
was. Evening.
Then I do love an early kickoff if it's on a Sunday morning. Because I can't be doing Sunday late when it's back to work the next day, back to routine. But I don't like an evening kickoff in the week.
No,
give me a Friday night under the lights.
It's been a lot recently, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And you're like, down on the Saturday, down on the Wednesday.
Yeah, especially in the winter when it's cold.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. At least it's getting a bit warmer now.
Yeah.
If you could change one thing in football instantly, what would it be?
No VAR.
Yes.
That's why it has to go up. And just for stadiums and football clubs to embrace accessibility and, you know, just have it as a standard of accessible to all disabilities, not as an afterthought, not as a, what we're going to do here. Like have an anticipated duty to have it in advance, what's going to happen and, you know, to be inclusive. So imagine if all football stadiums, all football clubs, but this is why we need those that are doing it all to be the shining light, to have your sensory rooms, your changing facilities, your wheelchair bays where wheelchair users are able to sit with their family and friends, audio description, the Give Vision headset, absolute game changer. That's something as well that with the Give Vision, they can actually enhance their match day experience for their hospitality customers.
Yeah.
And then for your blind and partially sighted fans to use the headsets would then just come through.
Yeah,
but you're enhancing it so much of an experience and then giving that to free.
Awesome.
Just things like that, like standard, and it doesn't have to cost what people think it does.
And from a marketing point of view or a business point of view, these are paying customers. So you want to get as many paying customers coming in as possible who are going to have the same experience as someone who is fully sighted.
Yeah. If anything, a lot of disabled people will be, you want to spend a lot more money here because they'll get here a lot earlier because they'll need that quietness first or, you know, the clearer route. So they're here longer. You know, going into the club shop and that as well.
Yep.
It's a lot of disabled people, this is their only day out. This is what they look forward to every week. They're all about their club.
Yeah.
So that's what it's disheartening when some clubs don't take that on board. They actually just want to exclude them. And it's like, they're the heart of your club. Like,
of course.
Yeah.
What's next for you and work with Love Brong?
It's been quite hard. So I thought by the end of last year that I'd be able to, because I was allowed to drop to part-time hours because I'm a sight loss and adjusting and with the lenses and stuff. I did go through access to work. I've now got like fusion technology on my computer. I've got a visually impaired keyboard. I've got like the headphones, larger monitor. It's not quite helped the way I thought it would. So we need to look now at what other options there is, whether it's like speech to text, that kind of thing. Just how else I can help with that.
So try and refine it to your...
Yeah. But I've just started doing more assets again for the social media, which I absolutely love. And it's, I literally said it to my colleague this morning, Adam. I was like, it's given me my passion back. I was like, because I love doing that side of things. It's been a bit of a journey because of the Fusion software, I have certain colours set. So it was like, well, I was creating an asset and it was like, it wasn't the colours I thought it was.
Yeah.
But I've got there. And, you know, it's even with that, I've reached out to, there's a group called Visually Impaired Football Fans United. We're all just a group of visually impaired football fans from all over the UK that have just got together in a WhatsApp group. A lot of us are trialling the Give Vision headsets, but it was in there. I reached out and one of the guys come forward and he helped quite a bit with that. And then another guy was like, cool, have you tried this? And that's how I ended up sorting it. Just things like that. A lot of them are Liverpool fans.
There's always a downside, isn't there? Yeah. It's always a downside. Yeah.
But yeah, it's. I think for now it's still, I've got to stay part-time, obviously for my daughter's needs as well. She's now in a specialist school, which is like nearly an hour away from our home. Right. So trying to get her to attend there more. She's now going into like post-16. So yeah, but it's a good balance at the minute. And I love what I do. And yeah, it's just continuing as it is. We've got some good...
You're an asset to Love Brong, yeah. So I'd assume that they want to help you as much as you want to stay there, and they're good guys, aren't they? So I think you're a great fit there.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Love Brong events that are coming up.
Yeah, so we've got the AJ Bell Great Birmingham Run coming up May the 3rd. We've still got a few spaces available for people to run and fundraise for Love Brong. So any runners, if they're interested, that would be amazing. And you get like your welcome pack, your Love Brong t-shirt, and just doing it for so many, you won't just be doing it obviously. For us, we support so many charities and causes. It will help a lot of people. And then we have our prison event coming up again in September. It is like an invite-only event, but if, you know, there's people out there that think they can fundraise, I think it's like 1,500 minimum, want to be locked up for the night, or if somebody wants to nominate somebody to be locked up for the night, it's such a good event.
A few people.
Yeah. You should come and do it.
Yeah, modern.
Yeah, should do. You and your brother.
Yeah.
We'll do it for the night. But yeah,
made in Brum.
To that. Yeah.
Locked up. Yeah.
Yeah, she could do it. Yeah, that's always a good event. We do that with in collab with Cash for Kids, West Midlands charity. So yeah, it's always a good event. And then we've already got a date set for our next curry king as well. Don't ask me to remember it. I know it's February next year.
Put some links up.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's all really good. I think that was one of the things where the last Curry King, that was my first events back in that kind of setting for a while with work since the site last. So it's like a lot of LED lights, dark room, a lot of people. But it's things like that. There's one of our patron supporters, JMG Insurance, a lovely woman called Karen Kombelik. I think you've met Karen, haven't you? Yeah.
Hello.
She's just so lovely inside and out, and she came along as a volunteer to help sell raffle, but actually she was my support for the night as well, without her even realizing that, you know, or me realizing that that's what it would be. She came and she helped me so much and really eased the night for me as well, because obviously I don't see faces anymore. If people's appearances change, I won't know who it is. I can tell sometimes by voices if I've heard somebody's voice enough. I'm not all that so and so. But that was really, I was very anxious about that, but I was pushing myself to do it. And Karen was such a great support for me that night as well. And it was such an incredible event. I love the Curry King event. So good.
Love
the smiles as well. It's like, as much as I'm losing my smile, that was such a good night.
So any message you'd like to leave with the listeners, the viewers, the blues fans, the disability community, disabled community? Is there anything that you've learned that you want to give tips and hints? Just give us like a Jerry Springer final word.
Good dear.
Look after yourself and each other, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I always say to people, which we've probably already touched on, there's a lot of hate and negativity in the world. You never truly know what someone's going through. You never truly know if somebody's got a hidden disability. You may see a physical disability. You may see a wheelchair, a cane. Don't think that that's all. You never know what they're going through. And then somebody, you know, stood next to you on the train platform. They might have just lost somebody completely, like really close to them. You never, and the grief that they'll be going through. Just be kind. Like, love will always win. Try not to listen to the news. Love always conquers. And just be kind. And as the blues say, keep right on.
You're a legend. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
If you like this video, please do click to subscribe to the channel. We currently have 5,500 members, over 500,000 views. So let's convert some views into memberships, and that'll continue to enable us to bring great guests on and continue making great podcasts. Thanks.